The World Health Organization is now calling the coronavirus a pandemic. How is the U.S. prepared for an influx of new cases?
We wouldn't be able to say that anyone who wants a test could get one because the policies vary from place to place.
And then, why some local economies are taking a hit, even before residents get sick.
There are a lot of people in the city of Austin who really count on this event to make a bulk of their income for the year.
It's Wednesday, March 11th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. We'll get to those stories in a moment. But first, after an 11-year bull run, the market is now in bear territory, dragged down by fears of the coronavirus. The Dow fell today by more than 1,400 points, or 5.9%. That put it 20% below its February high. The S&P 500 fell 140 points, or 4.9%. Here's our markets reporter, Amrith Ramkumar.
It's really the realization that the coronavirus could have a longer-lasting impact on corporate earnings. Stocks opened sharply lower in the morning than after the WHO declared the coronavirus officially a pandemic. The declines really accelerated, and people are kind of waiting to see some coordinated fiscal response from the government in the U.S. and really globally to kind of stem the tide a bit from an economic standpoint, and that hasn't really happened yet. And you've got oil prices falling off a cliff, hurting energy companies, and all of these fears are really kind of coming together the longer this goes on.
House Democrats are planning to vote on sweeping legislation tomorrow to address the economic impact of the coronavirus outbreak. Our reporter Natalie Andrews has more on Capitol Hill.
It would extend unemployment insurance and allow paid sick leave for individuals who contract the virus or need to be quarantined. They're specifically focusing on people who they say may not have paid sick leave through their employer, who become ill and need to stay home in order to limit the virus's effect and spread.
That package also calls for testing for coronavirus to be free. We'll have more on that coming up. The Supreme Court has granted an emergency request by the Trump administration to continue enforcing Remain in Mexico. That's the immigration policy that requires asylum seekers at the southern U.S. border to wait in Mexico while their cases are considered. This is the latest in a series of emergency orders from the Supreme Court that have rescued or revived Trump administration policies on immigration. And former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein was sentenced to 23 years in prison today. Weinstein was convicted of committing a first-degree criminal sexual act and third-degree rape. State Supreme Court Justice James Burke said the sentence reflected evidence that Weinstein had sexually assaulted other women beyond the allegations he was convicted of, and added, quote, "Although this is the first conviction, it is not a first offense." Coming up after the break, the availability of coronavirus test kits, and what happens to a town's economy when the biggest event of the year is called off. At a briefing in Geneva today, the World Health Organization officially declared the coronavirus outbreak a pandemic. It's now spread to 115 countries, with more than 120,000 confirmed cases reported around the world. 1,000 of those cases are in the U.S. But WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus wants the word to spark action, not fear.
There has been so much attention on one word, and you know that. Let me give you some other words that matter much more and that are much more actionable. These are prevention, preparedness, public health, political leadership, and most of all, people.
One of the big issues here in the U.S. has been the availability of coronavirus test kits. Despite a big push by the Centers for Disease Control, there still aren't enough to go around. Our reporter Peter Loftus joins us now to talk about that. So, Peter, the government's been saying that they're sending test kits out, but you've been looking into this. What's going on here? Are test kits not available to everyone who wants to be tested?
The supply of test kits has definitely gone up. The CDC, which developed the initial test, has been able to send out many more test kits over the past week or so. And so they are going to public health labs in the states, in some cases at the county or regional level. So there are more tests out there, and there's other capacity added too. But we wouldn't be able to say that anyone who wants a test can get one because the policies vary from place to place as far as who is eligible to get tested. And then there's also some other limitations or potential limitations on the ability of labs. Even if they have these test kits, they may not have easy access to other components of the testing process to get the tests up and running.
Can you give us some examples?
For instance, patient walk-in centers where you would go to get a blood test or something like that, they're actually not taking specimens. And one reason is that the phlebotomists who work there, they're not all necessarily trained or authorized to take that type of respiratory sample. So these big commercial testing services that are going to be critical to expanding the capacity, they're saying you got to get these tests done at your doctor or at a hospital, and then they'll be the ones that send us the tests or the samples for testing.
But since test kits are limited, hospitals have also been sending people away if they don't check the right boxes, like if they can't say they've been in contact with a person who has the virus, or if they don't have acute symptoms. Couldn't that have other ramifications?
You know, understandably, people who have symptoms that sound like what they hear about in the news about coronavirus, even though they might want to test, there are doctors and public health experts who say that not everybody necessarily needs one at first. And especially with some of these limitations on test availability that could come into play. The sort of the countering force there is that there's a general agreement among a lot of public health experts that testing did not get ramped up quickly enough in this country, and that more testing needs to be done, not only to help individual patients, but just to get a better handle on how much the virus has spread and in what way and how fast it may spread in the weeks ahead.
Conferences, baseball games, Coachella, events around the country are being moved, postponed, and canceled because of the spreading coronavirus. Last week, the huge tech and music festival South by Southwest was called off after Austin Mayor Steve Adler declared a state of emergency. And that sent shockwaves throughout the community, which has come to depend on the influx of tens of thousands of tourists every year. Our reporter Elizabeth Findell has been looking at how Austin and other local economies are grappling with the impact of the coronavirus, and she joins us now. So, Elizabeth, for people who haven't been to South by Southwest, how big of a deal is this event, and what does it mean for Austin from an economic standpoint?
This is an enormous event that brings hundreds of thousands of people to the city of Austin every year, essentially shuts down a big portion of downtown, takes over every business, and brings in approximately $355 million into Austin's economy every year. So it's a big deal.
And this could have a long-term effect. The organizers of South by Southwest say this has thrown them into a financial crisis, hasn't it?
Well, yes. The festival itself is really trying to figure out how they can make it to next year because their budgeting is year by year, and essentially they've already spent a decent portion of the money that they brought in this year through sponsorships and badge sales. And without the event happening this year, they'll have to defer those to next year. So they're looking at a serious financial crisis. They said they're going to need to find additional sources of income in order to not run out of money by summer. They laid off about a third of their full-time annual employees the other day, which is probably approximately 58 people. But their insurance does not include anything to cover communicable diseases or disasters like this. So they've been told they likely will not receive insurance help.
And regarding the impact of the virus, we're not just talking about the hotel industry or the conference organizers. You and your team spoke to a lot of people on the ground there, local businesses. You spoke to artists and musicians. What is the fallout going to mean for them, you know, both in the short term and the long term?
It's a lot. There are a lot of people in the city of Austin who really count on this event to make a bulk of their income for the year, perhaps, or to make several months worth of income after a slow winter. I mean, you're talking about waiters, waitresses, bartenders who and venues that just bring in so much more cash during that time. You're talking about drivers and pedicabbies. You're talking about all the musicians and artists who book, you know, more gigs during that time than any other time. You're talking about all the people who work for event companies who do the setup and takedown of all of this. You know, they, what they build infrastructure wise South by is extraordinary. So many people involved in the mechanics of it. It's a hard hit for a lot of people.
This story really illustrates how the coronavirus is hitting people on the local level. And even if they aren't getting sick, are there any lessons here that other festivals or cities can take away from this?
You know, I don't know. I think we're going to see more and more things canceled here in the coming days. I just came from a press conference at Houston City Hall where they announced the first case of community spread of the virus in the Houston area. And so they have immediately shuttered the Houston Rodeo, which brings in tens of thousands of people and runs for many weeks. And they're shutting down all other sort of large city affiliated events in Houston. So I think we're going to see more and more of that around the country. But what city leaders are grappling with right now is how big of an event is too big and how important is important enough to keep it going.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Findell with us. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, after his disappointing primary results on Tuesday, the path to the Democratic nomination is getting tougher for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. But in a press conference today, Sanders made it clear he's not throwing in the towel just yet.
Donald Trump must be defeated, and I will do everything in my power to make that happen. On Sunday night, in the first one-on-one debate of this campaign, the American people will have the opportunity to see which candidate is best positioned to accomplish that goal.
That debate against former Vice President Joe Biden is scheduled to be held in Phoenix. But as with most things these days, it'll also be impacted by the coronavirus. Sanders and Biden will go head-to-head for the cameras and voters at home, but without a studio audience. And that's What's News for this Wednesday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.